Hello and welcome to another edition of the Sports Pro Podcast. I am your host for this week's show. My name is Tom Bassam. I am the off-platform editor here at Sports Pro. This week we are talking all about the Indian Premier League. And to do so, I am joined, fortunately, by a couple of my esteemed colleagues in the editorial team, Josh Sim and Ed Dixon. Hello, Josh. Hello, Ed.
Hi, Tom.
Hi, gents. Good to see you both.
You'll notice that George Brewer is not here for this week's episode, despite the fact that he is probably the biggest cricket badger in the Sports Pro office. It's probably a good time to just let listeners know that George will be appearing slightly less frequently on the Sports Pro podcast these days. Unfortunately, he's got a little bit too big for his boots and decided that that we're below him. So you'll be hearing less from George. That's not actually true, but that's the story I'm sending anyway. But what this does mean is that you'll be hearing more regularly from the cast of characters in the Sports editorial team. And I can think of no finer pair that I'd rather start off this journey with than you two. So thank you very much, Josh and Ed.
Pleasure, Tom. There's no probably about it, really. George is very much SportsPro's resident cricket badger, but we will do our best in his absence.
I know. I feel like he probably could have done this whole podcast as a single monologue by himself, but we'll try and fill in for that knowledge. I think probably the best place for us to start, and we should note that the IPL season has already started, is some of the figures we've seen from the opening day. Josh, if I could come to you on this. So like, what are we seeing already from the IPL season in 2024 from a kind of engagement perspective?
Sure. So once again, the IPL is being shown by Disney Star on linear TV and Viacom 18, who have the digital rights, sort of the streaming rights in India. The opening day was on Friday and Jio streamed it again. They're streaming it for free. I'm sure we'll get onto in terms of why they're doing it. But their opening day viewership climbed by 51% from last season, with more than 111 million viewers logging into Jio Cinema for the opening day. Jio also came out and said that their platform had 590 million video views for that day. So again, just huge numbers. Obviously, a hugely popular property in India, and it doesn't seem to be letting up anytime soon. It seems to be this massive juggernaut that just year on year keeps rolling.
It's great when you dive into the numbers with Indian broadcast and the cricket, because it really truly gives you the scale of the size of that country and its passion for cricket. 590 million video views on the first day is absolutely staggering. Like, there is nothing that compares to that. The Super Bowl in the US gets upward of 110 to 130 million, whatever they claim the number is these days. And that's the biggest game of the year. This is the opening day of the season, and it's 590 million video views. That's not all for one game. As you said, Josh, 111 million viewers for the Chennai Super Kings versus Royal Challengers Bengaluru. Crucial name change. But Ed, was this expected? Did you think that after last season was record setting for Jio Cinema, were you expecting this kind of jump?
Yeah, this is kind of a sign of things to come, really. I mean, Viacom, they've put out a statement saying that they're going to see benchmarks reset and records rewritten throughout the season. So you'd expect them to be bullish. But yeah, they've effectively picked up from where they left off with the IPL, really. I mean, the final that notched up, I think it was 32 million views. That was a global record for the most concurrent views of a live streamed event at the time. And the first 5 weeks of IPL 2023 pulled in more than 13 billion video views on Jio Cinema. So the decision to make matches available to stream for free in a bid to generate more revenue from advertising sales, given the state of the Indian market, which we'll get on, clearly going well. But I think we'll be across the viewership throughout the tournament, but this, all signs point to this being a sign of things to come. Another stat from that, actually, from the opening weekend was for Chennai Super Kings, the opening game against Royal Challengers, 6.6 billion minutes of watch time recorded, which again is just another staggering number that you're trying to get your head around.
I think probably the best place to predict this, or we could have seen this happening, is that 23 million viewed the IPL player auction, which is essentially just teams saying names. I know the draft is a big thing in the States for the NFL and for the NBA, and that gets numbers there. They've turned that into an event, and it looks like the LPL has managed to kind of repeat the same trick.
To your point about the NFL draft, it's that event. It's a major television event in its own right, and the IPL is pivoting to try and do that as well with its auction. I mean, it's worth remembering that the IPL, although it is the most lucrative cricketing competition in the world, you know, bar none, and the most important single sports property in the Indian market, you know, its season is comparatively short, which means that the BCCI, they're looking for new ways to kind of boost awareness, increase excitement. So things like the auction is a tactic where it can be this other seminal moment in the season, despite there being a relatively brief campaign. So all signs to point to that becoming a more television event, and I'm sure the IPL will be looking for other various activations in and around, outside of the season rather, to drum up interest.
I think we'll probably come on to talk about the IPL's sort of ability to spread its wings beyond the window, and that comes beyond just the game itself, I think, a little bit later. But Josh, you mentioned it right at the top there, and I know you're currently writing a deep dive piece into the Indian broadcast market. Perhaps you can give us a little bit of detail on why Viacom 18 has gone for this free move, put all of their games on their mobile app free for Indian users.
One of the key points is that Viacom 18, who have the digital rights to the IPL, they are under the Reliance Industries banner, the company which is bankrolled by Mukesh Ambani, who's one of the richest men in India, and who also operates Jio. It's one of the biggest, I think the biggest telecoms company in India, 470 million mobile phone subscriptions as of recently. So Viacom 18's reach is sort of linked to Jio, really, because a lot of people with Jio phone subscriptions can then access Viacom 18's content, in this case, the IPL. And yeah, you mentioned that they announced that they would stream the tournament for free. Obviously, that's not just to attract the 470 million that currently have a Jio subscription, but anyone else, really. We talked about mobile streaming in India. It's the seventh cheapest in the world at the moment. I think it's 16 cents, US dollar cents, to get a gigabyte of mobile data. So yeah, it's really cheap. And for Viacom 18, it's obviously pulls in, I mean, it's already going out to a massive audience. It pulls in potentially an even bigger audience, as, you know, we talk about India and sort of the broadband penetration is still relatively low. There's sort of still some areas where the infrastructure is not quite there yet, or people haven't quite caught on to sort of getting smartphones and streaming. So it's a massive draw. And as well as that, in India, the media revenue that companies make, a lot of it comes from advertising as well. So Viacom 18 are able to attracts a lot of advertisers who want to obviously reach the 470 million with their products and advertising. And, you know, where better to do it than the biggest sporting property in the country with the IPL. So there's a multitude of reasons there. I mean, it makes sense for Viacom 18 to obviously make money from the advertising, potentially from adding new subscriptions as well. And for the BCCI, it works out well because then more eyeballs are on their league, really.
What do you think it means in terms of who is coming out on top when we're looking at after 2 years of this IPL rights deal, right? So we had Disney Star, who bought up the linear rights, and we had Reliance Jio, Viacom 18, bought up the digital rights. They've made those games free to air. Obviously, they paid a really significant amount. I mean, we're talking about $6.2 billion between Disney and Viacom 18 for these. That's US dollars as well, $6.2 billion US dollars for this deal. But they've got that huge potential market to tap into. Are they actually making money on the IPL right now? Is Jio Cinema profitable? How is it shaping up as a deal for Viacom 18?
In Reliance's recent financial results, in terms of revenue for their media and entertainment business, they reported a 141% or in that ballpark year-on-year increase in revenue. And they largely attributed it to, this was the most recent financial results after the IPL, and they attributed it to the advertising. Speaking to an analyst for this piece, and he estimates that Jio made around between $240 million to $300 million in advertising. And in comparison, he believes Disney made about $200 million. So not a, you know, sizable gap, but there's still a difference between the two. So I think, yeah, Jio, again, we talk about the scale and the audience and being able to sort of reach to all those people. And given the amount of advertising you can put in a cricket game, sort of, you know, in between overs, like maybe, you know, in between replays, there's a lot of opportunity there for a broadcaster to sort of market, take these ads out, spots out to market. So I think it's a massively profitable thing for Jio. And yeah, demand doesn't seem to go away. And, you know, as we talk about, it's the biggest thing for an Indian company to put itself in front of. So why not go for it? I guess we see how much Super Bowl ads cost. And you mentioned the comparison for video views. Like, imagine, you know, for the IPL, it's nearly double, triple the video views. And for a company to get themselves out there, then obviously that means massive brand exposure.
Yeah, absolutely. And like, I mean, even if you were to break that down, right? So like their investment in this was around about $3 billion US. If they're making $300 million a year on ads, in addition to the sort of increase in attributed revenues that they can account to mobile subscriptions, etc., you'd think this is probably going to pay itself back relatively quickly. Ed, the other side of this coin, of course, is Disney. I don't think anyone quite understood the impact of losing these rights would be for them. What's your take on that?
Viacom 18, they ended Disney's sort of stranglehold on the IPL. And I believe the digital rights ended up actually costing slightly more than the linear ones. But I imagine the PG language in Disney Star at the moment is probably whoops. I think the opening day of the IPL has only just reaffirmed that India, if it isn't already, is well on its way to being a digital first sports consuming country. I mean, just looking at the way the Indian market is, this is even when the last rights were sold. You know, there are fewer than 250 million households in India that have access to a TV. Josh already alluded to the cost of a phone plan, of a data plan in India being comparatively cheaper. You know, Indian consumers, they're reluctant to pay for premium content. The pay TV market is relatively small in relation to the population. So all the signs are pointing to advertising supported video on demand. So AVOD services winning over SVOD, which is subscription video on demand in the country. Is the pay TV market in India ever going to be economically viable? At the moment, you'd have to say it's looking highly unlikely. And the power is very much seems to be shifting to Viacom 18 at the moment when it comes to IPL broadcasting.
Yeah. And I mean, that seems to be playing out as well in the one thing we haven't really touched on yet, which is the impending merger between these two, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, that was announced, well, it was the start of the year. Sort of, you know, we had probably one of the biggest deals of the year, and we'd barely got our feet back under the desk after the Christmas break. Yeah, the merger was signed off back end of February. There's multiple things to consider with that merger. I mean, it brings together the bulk of premium cricket rights into a single entity, and just sort of looking ahead to, you know, the next IPL rights cycle, which obviously doesn't start until 2027, but it does mean that Disney and Viacom, they're no longer going to have to compete with one another. And it's going to offer huge amounts of free live cricket to, I think, the mobile connections in India. I think it's about 1 billion. I think that move will justify the cost of rights for Disney and Viacom. And it just adds to, you know, it's going to reunite the IPL's linear and digital rights and effectively mean there's going to be a monopoly on top tier cricket in India across those platforms.
That's certainly true. There are other players in India, Sony sort of being the main one. When it comes to entertainment, Netflix is absolutely massive there too. Given Netflix has made a not sort of insignificant move into live sports with the WWE, we can't discount at some point in the future that happening elsewhere. That's not me saying that Netflix is going to be buying up Indian cricket rights anytime soon. Just saying that if that's where the power is in India, you've got to think that it wouldn't be completely alien for a major media company to look to tap into a major cultural and sporting phenomenon in cricket to drive its growth if that's a model it's taken up elsewhere. I'm aware that we could probably sit and talk about media and India all day. This isn't the Streamtime podcast, so we won't do that. But before we move on, Josh, I would like to get just a little bit more of your thoughts, quoting your upcoming piece, if you like, just to give us a little bit of a snapshot of like just how impactful cricket is and like what the IPL means to the market.
It's funny, like the IPL, it's relatively new. It's one of those things where it feels like it's been in the cricket ecosystem for so long, but it only came about in 2008. And on the back of India winning that 2020 World Cup in 2007 and wanting to sort of capture that audience, especially with a short form format. And it's remarkable to think that, you know, the rights deal at the time for the initial sort of 10 years, it was a 10-year deal to begin with. It was about 980 million in today's market in terms of doing the conversions that Sony paid for 10 years. And now it's, you know, you mentioned Viacom paid 3 billion, Disney paid just over 2 billion or something like that. I mean, it's huge. It's what, you know, young boys in India grow up wanting to do the most. I don't set up with authority, obviously, but it seems to be that's the biggest thing that captures young people's attention over there. And some of the big stars that you see, they've been playing cricket since they were young and not necessarily in sort of urban population as well. Like in terms of rural towns and villages, it's the number one sport. It dominates. It's got local leagues set up in towns and villages, creating its own sort of local economy. So it is truly dominant. There's not really much that comes close to it. I think the Pro Kabaddi League is the only one that surpassed 200 million views across a cumulative league season, but that's a very obviously traditional Indian sport that doesn't have the same awareness around the world as cricket does. So Yeah, the IPL, it's a juggernaut. We see it being mentioned. All the top players around the world want to come play in it. We see its influence in shaping the cricket calendar, the greater cricket calendar. I know George isn't here, but happy to talk about sort of how much it has sort of shaped, whether it's the Major League Cricket in the US, whether it's the South African League as well. So it's huge, and it's staggering what these rights values go for and the viewership goes for, but that's just a testament to how popular it is in India.
Yeah, the economics on it still work at this point. We're not quite at the stage where we're at with maybe European football, where that's starting to kind of come into question a little bit. Let's move on then, Josh, as you mentioned it, to talk about the sort of the influence of the IPL beyond its borders. This year, Sky signed up for a multi-year rights deal for the IPL. Usually those kind of things are done quite late on. The BCCI, generally, in this case, the rights holder being, I think it's Times India is the global one. Maybe I'm wrong on that. Can't remember. But that's usually done fairly last minute, limited time to promote it, because the Indian market thinks that's the best way of getting value. Whereas this time Sky said, no, we want this IPL locked down until at least 2027. And they included the Women's Premier League. So like that's the female equivalent of the IPL, which has had a really successful first launch season in that too. But like, that's just consumers. I guess the kind of the interesting off-season storylines for me when it came to the IPL were, Ed, the interest of owners of IPL franchises in English counties, something that we probably wouldn't even thought of in 2008 when the IPL was launched.
No, groups were linked with buying into Yorkshire, and the Delhi Capitals remain linked with buying into Hampshire. I'm sure we'd love to say it was because, you know, they're enthused by the thought of two men and a dog watching English county cricket in cold and wet April, but it's not, surprisingly. It seems to be looking to buy up these English counties is to effectively gain, I think the reports have described it as, a first mover advantage in terms of investing in the 100. You know, the ECB is expected to allow investors to buy stakes in individual teams, as much as 50% potentially being on the table. So IPL franchises, as much like they made early moves in Major League Cricket, and they've done so more recently invested in teams in the Caribbean, South Africa, as Josh mentioned. So they are spreading their wings. And it's interesting that they're spreading their wings for a tournament that is as popular as it is in India. It doesn't really need to expand its sort of global influence beyond them, and yet it's choosing to. Again, it's kind of reminiscent of what the NFL's doing, you know, a league that's so dominant in its home market. But clearly it sees room for growth and crucially influence as well. So it's spreading its wings, and its influence is only going to get bigger and bigger outside India. And that is going to have a knock-on effect on the wider global game, which is, again, not comparable to the NFL. That's where it's different. We've mentioned a few similarities between the IPL and the NFL. But where it's different is the NFL doesn't affect the wider American football calendar, whatever that is, whereas the IPL absolutely does.
The other side of that coin is to argue that previously India had an undersized influence compared to its market. And actually now this is more reflective of the way that the economics of cricket work. But to pick up on that point about who this benefits, Josh, the ICC World T20, as Ed says, that benefits more than just the BCCI. Should the BCCI care? Like, it doesn't seem to be that bothered about international cricket generally. It seems very much the focus within the BCCI is on making sure that its product has primacy.
Yeah, I mean, further to that, I think there was a report coming out during last year's World Cup that Disney Star were keen for the tournament to remain sort of a 10-team, a limited team tournament, and didn't want it to expand because of the supposedly the big matchups you get, I guess, in the new format of whether it's, you know, a regular India-Pakistan game in the sort of round-robin game. I mean, you had that tournament sort of, I don't know, group stage part of it, I guess. It seemed to go on for quite a while, right? There were so many games until you actually got to the knockout stages. And that seemed to be to the benefit of the broadcaster, because you had, I guess, no quote unquote dead matches, because you had all these teams sort of playing each other again and again with points at stake. So it does feel as though that the BCCI is looking at how their commercial partners can gain from it, from the international landscape, and certainly keeping, you know, a World Cup sort of, again, not expanding it to as many countries and keeping it to a closed format definitely rewards Disney Star in terms of viewership numbers and in terms of sort of, again, creating excitement amongst having these big players against each other. And which comes at the expense of countries like, say, the Netherlands, who are more developmental and probably need more exposure to these big tournaments, but probably are less likely to get it if the status quo remains, to sort of keep it as a closed shop.
Mm. Let's talk about the T20 World Cup, because it literally starts straight after the IPL. There's some interesting narratives with some of the players that are not taking part in the IPL and some of the players that are taking part in the IPL in terms of getting themselves selected for that T20 World Cup. But really, I think this tournament is all about, this for me seems to be where the ICC has the ability to basically can kind of fulfill its mission, which we should remember this about governing bodies, is that their mission for their sport is to govern and grow the game and make it and sort of extend its reach. This tournament features a lot of teams who don't feature in that 50 over tournament, including one that I think the ICC and most people in cricket view as pretty clear and a pretty big target, and that's the US. Ed, I'll come to you on this. The US is hosting games, they're qualified, and then straight afterwards we go into a season of Major League Cricket. Is this a good setup for this tournament in terms of having that attention on the T20 format?
I guess it'll build momentum. That would probably be it. In terms of what Major League Cricket is and what it wants to become, I'm sort of just trying to kind of get my head around what the proposition is. I mean, obviously we know what it is. It's a T20 franchise league with, you know, various different owners. But I'm kind of drawing comparisons to it purely because I just wrote a feature on it a few weeks ago. It was Major League Rugby and Major League Cricket. Now, Major League Rugby's obviously been around longer than Major League Cricket has. But, you know, there are parallels in a sense that they're two sports that are not local to the market. You know, they're coming, you know, they're from the outside looking in. But they're trying to sort of crack a market which, as big as it is, they feel still has further room to accommodate them. But with Major League Cricket, I'm sort of struggling to find a concrete answer, not because I don't really have one, but more it's just kind of, it's still in such an early stage. It's only in its second season. I think what the ICC will hope is that, assuming the T20 Worlds prove a hit, then Major League Cricket in turn will benefit from that. And that'll create sort of a movement from the grassroots up. So I don't really have a problem with this sort of big slate of cricket in America. It's just translating that into sort of consistent, sustainable growth, really, because we've seen far more established leagues fall by the wayside, even something like spring football. So, we will see, which I know is not a very good answer, but I don't have my crystal ball with me at the moment.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, like, to me, it looks like they're kind of following a very similar game plan to FIFA in 1994. So they took the World Cup to the US, huge audiences in the stadiums, launched the MLS straight afterwards. And to its credit, MLS is still going. We think of it now as a fairly well-established league, if albeit still a bit of a challenger brand. This I think, has the kind of the potential to do the same. So I'm just looking at the fixtures for the T20 and the way it's been organized. Basically, you're going to have India play Pakistan in New York and India play the US in New York. We're not expecting any upsets in the US-India game, but those have the potential, I think, to capture a significant amount of attention and also like the sort of ever-growing expat population from those countries. So like the way they've structured that group stage could really work out well for the US in terms of bringing attention to it. Australia and England being in the other group, which play the majority, they'll play all their group games in the Caribbean, I think will work out. That does look, at least it's like it's been set up quite well. We're trawling through the major talking points in cricket right now. So we've hit the sort of big media reach of India. We've hit the growing reach of the IPL. A couple of things we should probably wrap up just before we end this week's episode is the other side of the coin in the economics of sport, and that is the sponsorship side. Ed, big renewal for the IPL with Tata before this tournament. Perhaps you can talk us through that deal and maybe some of its impact.
Yep. So it's a new 5-year deal, an extension to the previous deal. It's worth $300 million. There had been competition. So ABG reportedly tabled a bid, but Tata was allowed to match that offer as part of its agreement with the BCCI. And that is kind of provided the sort of the latest sort of footnote in the sort of wider IPL commercial success story. But it's also interesting looking at other teams as well, that, you know, the IPL goes without saying is a hotbed for domestic brands. So we've been seeing the likes of Team 11 make quite aggressive moves there. They've signed deals with a number of teams on top of their already league-wide deal. But we're also seeing teams, you know, look abroad as well. So just putting a few names out, the new Chennai Super Kings, they've partnered with Etihad Airways. Redstone Royals, they've signed up NEOM, the Saudi smart city. So teams have been perfectly happy to look abroad. The deal in particular with I brought up Etihad and NEOM just because it sort of points to closer ties between the IPL and the Middle East, really. I mean, you know, the Saudi Arabia's already been linked with buying into the league. That seems to have gone quiet for the moment. And I think that's a different can of worms, which we might have to say for a future episode.
I think that is a whole different podcast.
But, absolutely. Yeah. But it just points to, my point is that domestic brands can't get enough of it. And I think more and more international brands, as our commercial guide, which you can check out now at sportspro.com, you know, provides a great breakdown of not just the domestic brands, but also the international brands and the international broadcasters involved. So it is, as I said at the top of the episode, you know, that influence of cricket's most lucrative tournament, it's only going one way, and that's up.
I think I might peruse the same list that you did, some of the brands buying into the IPL in our new commercial guide, which, as Ed said, very worth checking out. I listed off Etihad Airways, Gulf Oil, Qatar Air, NEOM, Red Bull, and DP World, all brands that you'd expect to be buying into. Let's think about some of the top tier properties in the world, like golf majors, tennis majors, major international football teams, major international football tournaments. So previously, I think when the IPL started, it was much more of a domestic marketing opportunity. Like Josh put out quite nicely what the sell is to those brands, but clearly it's becoming a way bigger than just a domestic product too. And I think these deals are kind of indicative of that. If sponsorship deals are indicative of anything, let's talk about some of the players in this. There are some, as Josh alluded to when he was talking about the sort of ecosystem for cricket in India, the IPL has become almost a bit of a factory for some of this talent, but also that means some of its stars are incredibly marketable. I don't know if either of you had picked out players at all that you think could potentially be big breakthroughs for this year, Josh?
It's not a new name, but obviously Virat Kohli, who's the number one figure in the country and in the sport, he obviously placed well on Sports Pro's 50 most marketable athletes list.
Making a bit of a comeback for this tournament as well.
Yeah, so he may be up there on that list and do well. I mean, Shubman Gill, who obviously had a pretty decent test series against England, he's a batsman that, again, is sort of rising prominence. I think the thing that struck me with, and admittedly I watch more test cricket than short form cricket, but with the Indian team, there's a lot of young players. It seems to be a new crop of players that are coming through. So and again, a lot of them grew up playing cricket and probably short form cricket. So it does give them a bit of a major opportunity for them to sort of launch themselves into the national consciousness. And then, you know, they'll sort of welcome companies to, you know, spend out on endorsement deals and such. So yeah, definitely. Shubman Gill, I think, is one that comes to mind for me in terms of someone who could launch himself into a sort of national figure status.
Yeah. Just on that point, Josh, I mean, 50 most marketable athlete ranking last year, the highest ranked Indian cricketer on that was Smriti Mandhana from the Indian women's team. She was 37th. The only men's cricketer to crack the top 50 was Hardik Pandya. So there is, as you mentioned, Josh, there are a number of top youngsters which England saw firsthand during the test series. So you know, if there is ever an environment to not just showcase your skills but also build out your commercial profile, then the Indian cricket market is one of them. So be interesting to see if any of them crack the top 50 this year.
Yeah, I mean, I think one that has kind of major potential, and it's exactly almost that pathway that Josh was talking about, is, and I'm going to butcher this pronunciation, but Yashavi Jaiswal, who came up playing for the Rajasthan Royals. Absolutely killed it in his first few seasons in the IPL, and then got his maiden call up for India's test team last year, and was player of the series most recently against England at home. He is only 22, looks kind of the next one off the production line in terms of like that big name in Indian cricket. Brands will probably be all over him. I noted he already had a couple of deals, one with like JBL Electronics. I mean, for someone so young to already risen to that kind of prominence, we're seeing the end of people like MS Dhoni, who is still playing in the league, and a couple of others of that generation of Indian talent from who sort of the first wave of IPL talent. That's kind of coming to an end. And yeah, young players like Shubman Gill and Yashir Vijayaswal are going to be that next one. I guess we'll see where they land in this next year's 50mm. That's something we've got coming up for the rest of this year. I also feel like that's probably a pretty good place to leave it, guys. I don't know about you. Thank you very much, Ed. Thank you very much, Josh, for joining us for this week's episode. And hopefully I'll be seeing a bit more of you on Sports Tripod.
Cheers, Tom.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Cheers, guys.